This episode of Tales from the Lot is sponsored by ShakedownT-Shirts.com with unique lot style t-shirts, license plate frames, coffee mugs, and all sorts of things for Grateful Dead, Fish, Zappa, Panic, and more. ShakedownT-Shirts.com, where all U.S. orders over $35 ship free. And just for Tales from the Lot listeners, use the code LOT20 for 20% off of any order. That's LOT20. Hey, real quick, before we kick off this episode of Tales from the Lot, I've got some exciting news to share with you. I've been working on a project called Summer Tour The Game, inspired by our love of following our favorite bands around. It's a tabletop board game where you chase shows, collect ticket stubs, and relive the magic of live music, all from your own tabletop. I'm thrilled to announce that the Kickstarter campaign for Summer Tour The Game is launching on May 12th. If you're a fan of this podcast, then I think you're really going to enjoy this game. You can check out a short video and all the details at summertourthegame.com. So whether you're a seasoned road warrior or a tabletop gaming enthusiast or just looking for a new way to connect with friends, I invite you to check out the campaign and consider supporting it. Every pledge and share and word of encouragement makes a difference. I'd love it if you would help spread the word and make Summer Tour The Game a reality. Thank you, everyone, for listening and being a part of this journey, and now on with the episode. Tales from the Lot, episode 21, You Were All Part of the Band. Tommy Kennedy's here to talk about 9377 in Englishtown, New Jersey, hiking for mental health, and East Coast versus West Coast shows. Let's do it.
Hi, welcome to Tales from the Lot. My name is Will. I'm your host, and my guest today is Tommy Kennedy. We're going to talk about 9377 at Raceway Park and a bunch of other stuff. Tom's coming to us from Texas. How you doing, Tommy?
Good. I'm doing good.
Good, good. Fantastic. Let's just start at the beginning. So, like, are you from Texas originally?
No, I'm originally from New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey. Okay. And you grew up there. So what were you into growing up musically?
Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
I was a Dylan head way before I was a Grateful Dead head. Mm-hmm. When I went to college, I moved up to Boston, lived in a house, an old Victorian, with 10 other guys and one girl. And somebody put on, I'm going to say Wake of the Flood. And I was like, holy shit. And that's when the bus came by and I got on.
Nice.
And my first show was up in Boston.
Gotcha. I you mentioned Dylan. I didn't find Dylan really till after I found the Dead, but I know I was kind of listening to Equal Bob Dylan and Grateful Dead at the beginning there when I first found it. Two amazing.
Mention that. Do you know that Bob Dylan requested to become a member of the Grateful Dead? Yes, he requested to be a member of the Grateful Dead, and. The Dead loved Dylan, and they got together and talked about it, and they voted on it, and they decided it probably wouldn't be the best thing for the band, so they declined him. Yeah, when he toured with the Grateful Dead, mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was back in the 80s,
like 86 or 87.
But yeah, and he really enjoyed playing with the Dead. He didn't think he was, but he really did, really. After the first show, then he got into it, and he eventually requested to become a member of the Grateful Dead. Huh. And they seriously considered it and then voted on it and decided it probably wouldn't be the best thing for the band. And although I'm absolutely certain they made the right decision, I wonder what the Dead would have been like with Dylan in there, you know. It would have been interesting, I think. But I'm glad that he denied him, you know.
Yeah, I agree. That probably would have been the greatest idea, but right. Just have him be a permanent opener, mate.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the idea, because it is a great mix. And your first show was in Boston, you said?
Yeah, about 1972, I think.
Right, and so how did you end up there? Were there some friends going, or were you the one who instigated and said, "Listen, you guys got to come see this"?
No, we were living in a house up in Boston, and like I said, somebody put on Wake of the Flood, And we were like, holy crap. And then the rest is history. I heard that and, you know, and, you know, it was early 70s. We were doing a lot of experimentation back then.
Right.
And back then, some people used to paint their faces to go to a Dead show. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to paint our faces to go to the show. And we didn't have tickets, right? So we had to take the trolley. And I had my face all white with red lips, blue eyeshadow, and black teardrops coming off my eye. Mm-hmm. And we get on the trolley, and this one woman just burst out laughing. And we're like, what's so funny? They're like, you guys. We're like, we're going to a Dead show, you know.
Right, the circus is in town.
We got tickets, and we got in, so it was great.
Nice. That's awesome. And then, those folks, did you just, once you saw that, did that same group just keep on seeing shows after that?
No, I was only up there for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I actually went back down to Jersey, and my good friend Pete and I started going to the shows. Mm-hmm. And we went to many, many, many shows, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's how I really, you know, really got into them.
Right. Yeah. It's hard not to. When they come that often, I mean, when they were toured, they just toured forever. I mean, which is kind of a blessing and a curse, I guess. But it was easy to see them because they were just always coming around, even in the 90s. You know,
people say 187 shows. What, did you follow them around the country? I was like, no. New York, you had 10 shows at the Garden, the Nassau Coliseum, New Jersey. Then I wound up moving to California. Mm-hmm. And so we have Irvine shows, the Kaiser, the Coliseum. Hell, they play all the time up there. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, I wound up with 187 Dead tickets, you know, stubbed.
Wow.
You know? Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, and at that time too, in those locations, you're seeing some of the all time classic shows. I talked about it at the beginning. Let's talk about this English Town, New Jersey show, for instance.
So the English Town was my brother, who was not a deadhead. Mm-hmm. He didn't even smoke pot or anything. He was totally straight. My friend Pete and another friend of mine, JC was his name. And so we got there real early to get a good spot. And mm-hmm. we tried to bring an ice chest in. We had a big ice chest. They wouldn't let us in because we had beer. So we went back, rearranged the ice chest to hide the beer, went back in to the same guy. Right next to the guy, there was another guy. And he goes, I need to look in the ice chest. I opened it up and I pulled the ice to the side where I knew there was no beer. And I said, he already got us. And he looked over to the guy. He goes, they're good. I already checked them. So we got in with almost two cases of beer and about a fifth of vodka and two half gallons of orange juice. So we were set. we could have sold a can of beer for $10 in there. It was like, of course we didn't, but it was really, really good. It was nice to have that.
Yeah, and, sure.
And that's then awesome. We also had what was called at the time Blue Barrel. I don't know if you know what that was, but it was an LSD, and it was tiny little blue barrel. So all of us, except for my brother, we did the Blue Barrel. And the show was actually going to be Marshall Tucker, New Riders, mm-hmm. and the Dead. And so we got there real early. So we were up pretty close. And I remember them turning on a hose because it was really hot that day. They turned a hose on for people to cool off. Well, as the day progressed, that hose turned into a huge, huge mud pit. People were playing in the mud. It was It was crazy. And so my brother was drinking the screwdrivers. And, of course, we were having some and some beers also. But with the LSD, you can tend to drink a lot more because it's hard to override the LSD.
Yeah, well,
next thing you know, I'm looking at my brother, and he is, like, looking like he's dying to me. He's laying down. It's not – so I looked at him. I said, Kevin – you look really, really bad to me. I said, do I need to take you to the infirmary? And he looks at me, he goes, no, I'm just drunk out of my mind. I'm like, okay. I said, okay. You know, because when you're that high, you can't tell, you know.
And you never know what somebody put it into his drink, you know.
Yeah, that's true too, you know. Yeah. Yeah, he was fine. And it was an amazing show. And in fact, afterwards, the album, there was a bootleg box set album vinyl. And I bought it because the show was so good. And I had that vinyl. I always bought bootleg albums because I was like, they're not going to play forever. And I want to listen to them for the rest of my life. Little did I know I didn't need to be taking shows. It was an amazing, amazing show.
I listened to it actually, but I realized it was what Dick's Picks 15, I think it is. Really crisp copy that you can stream anywhere. So this afternoon I've been listening to that whole show, and it's so much energy, and so I guess. It's the first one back. So Mickey Hart had been in a car accident.
Yeah.
And so they'd taken a little time off. This was the first one back. And you could tell, I mean, there were some flubs here and there, but the energy that they were going at, everything was so amazing. Like the estimated on there is so good.
Yes.
And really the whole thing is.
Yeah.
So definitely recommended listening there.
Years ago, I went to a festival in Pennsylvania, and the new the Marshall Tucker Band was there. And I was like right up front, and he's like, you know, last time we were in this part of the country was 1978 in Englishtown. I looked up at him and I said, no, 77. I said, I was there and you were there. It was 77. He laughed. He goes, well, we were pretty high. I was like, so late, but we can remember when it was.
Yeah, we know what year it was. Yeah. We get that close. That's great. So did New Riders play first and then Marshall Tucker and then the Dead that day?
No, it was Marshall Tucker first, then New Riders. Mm-hmm. And if my memory serves me well, I think Jerry may have played Pedal Steel with the Nerps.
That was going to be my next question, actually.
I think, I'm pretty sure he did. You know, when you go to that many shows, it's hard to remember, but I'm pretty sure he was playing Pedal Steel at the, we'd have to look at Dick's Pick to see if he was, but I think he was.
Yeah. Cool. So, you know, you mentioned you lived in California for a while, and what are some of the standout ones that you went to?
Well, my favorite venue to see them in, and I saw the Dead there once, but I saw Jerry there a few times, is the Kaiser Auditorium. And one of Jerry's albums, there's a picture of the Kaiser and the people in the crowd. It was a great, great venue. It was small. They had a bar downstairs. They pumped the music into the bar, so when you wanted to go get a beer, you could still hear the band.
That's great.
That was really great. And I've been to a New Year's show. That was really funny. And I remember going into the show, and there were people standing there with $100 bills for a ticket. And I was like, oh, my God, somebody would pay $100? And now I wish I could pay $100.
Mm-hmm. I'd gladly pay $100 for that.
Yeah. And, but at that time, $100 for a concert was unheard of, you know.
So that was no doubt. Good.
And also Irvine was great place to see the dead. And I lived really close to Irvine. So that was, I consider them playing in my backyard when they played Irvine.
Right. So that was like early mid 80s when you were living there then?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was in San Diego to about 1980 to about 91. Went back to Jersey for a couple of years, then went back to San Diego. Then went back to Jersey, you know. So I've seen the East Coast shows and the West Coast shows. And there's a huge difference between an East Coast show and a West Coast show. You see the Dead in Madison Square Garden. Everybody is singing every word, you know, standing up. The first show I saw in California, everybody was sitting down and listening to it. And I'm like, what the hell? it was really bizarre, you know. After like a while, you know, years later, people were starting to really totally enjoy the shows better. In the Bay Area, they always did, but down in San Diego, it was like it was weird, you know. And then there was another.
It was weird.
There was another interesting show at Giant Stadium in New Jersey where when I got home, my parents said, what did you do today? I said, well, I was at the Dead show at the Meadowlands. And they're like, well, we were at a concert at the Meadowlands. I was like, well, you weren't at the Dead show. And my mom was like, no, those people are disgusting. We were seeing Bobby Vinton. I was like, oh, joy. Damn, I missed that one.
Yeah, no doubt. Bobby Vinton.
Yeah.
High up on the list.
Yeah, exactly. but it was...
that's hilarious.
It was funny. My dad was a drummer. I always wished I could have taken him to see the Dead, you know, because at that time, having two drummers was, in my father's generation, never heard of, you know. And my dad
Nobody's
would not have liked the music, but he would have appreciated the drums, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, people say that, but it, I mean, I get that sometimes it gets a little extended, but for the most part, I mean, it's Americana. I mean, there's country in there, there's blues in there. I feel like, you know, unless you're like a, I only listen to like hard bop or something.
Yeah.
then, you know, otherwise I feel like you're going to find something redeemable about it, you know?
Well, you know, I never went to the bathroom during space. I didn't want to miss it at all.
Same.
Because if you really pay attention to what they're doing, there's a method. It's not just noise. There's a method. There's actually a beat to it. And if you really pay attention, it's very, very cool.
Yeah. As a drummer myself, I was always pretty inspired by the drum segment, indeed. Like, and I remember going at my first show. I'd listened to some random Dead. I didn't really like it, but my friend sort of forced me to go. And obviously I loved it from the first note of Half Step. But by the time drums came around, I didn't know what it was, didn't know what that was going to happen. It was just like, what?
Yeah.
A whole 20 minutes of just drums. And I was blown away by it. So that was one of the favorite parts. Now, I will admit to going to the restroom a couple of times during Way to Go Home, though.
Well, my bathroom was one more Saturday night because I think they played that every single Saturday night. And I was like, God, you know, especially if they did it for an encore. I was like, well, now I can beat the traffic. You know, I've heard that song so many times.
Yeah. If it's an encore.
Yeah.
For sure. If it's an encore, it's time to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if not, then, you know, maybe you'll get something good there. So you saw 100 and how many shows did you say?
187, give or take one or two. Right around 100.
Yeah, close enough. But that's
And that's, it's funny because people,
think
I was like touring and stuff. I was like, no, 187. I was like a novice, you know. People have seen them 500 times, you know, and more, you know.
Right. And you know, and you were seeing them when they still had a while to go. So there's plenty of years of Dead available to you, really. And so that's the big difference. I mean, there was, I mean, like you said, they were touring all the time. And over the years, they just add up. I mean, I'm sort of the same way with Fish. I don't follow them around, but I steadily see my number rising and rising and rising. Just right. I live next to Dick's. I'm a short flight from Vegas. And so it just goes up and up because like, they play those places a lot. You know?
What I found amazing as I look back at all this is I got to witness their progression from the early 70s and even tapes from the 60s when they were really raw and how they progressed into being, I hate to say professional, but more of a professional sound to them. And it was really interesting seeing their progression all along, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I was thinking of that today, listening to that English Town show, that, you know, just how kind of clangy changy the guitars are. It's just all really loose and not, you know, where you get to like where they're in the mid, late 80s and 90s, where it's almost like a studio sound coming out of the speakers because it's so clean.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, really clean sound by the end, which was good. And, you know, they were ahead of their time when it came to all that stuff. So, but yeah, there's definitely a progression from when Donna and Keith were there up through to when Brent came on. I feel like there was kind of a, like right after that, it really started getting a lot cleaner. I think
it did.
Sound wise.
Yeah. He really, really, truly added to the band big time. It was a really, really good choice to bring him on. Unfortunately, he succumbed to the demons, but he was really, really good for the band, I think.
Okay, so you're involved with a nonprofit also, is that right?
Correct.
And that's called Hike for Mental Health?
Correct. Yep.
Tell me about that.
We started this about 12 years ago. I was at a Holiday Inn right near where I lived having dinner. A girl walked in. She sat down, ordered a hamburger. I never saw a woman eat a hamburger like that in my life. I looked at her. I said, that burger never had a chance. She goes, I've been fantasizing about it for 3 months. I've been in China eating rice. And so she was there on business. I lived right next door. Then she introduced me to another guy, Leo, who was also staying at the Holiday Inn. And we would go out and do some hikes and stuff. Nancy moved back to Texas, and Leo and I were still in Jersey, and we did some hiking. And we were having dinner, and we were like, wouldn't it be good to do something to give back? And Leo said, well, let's see. I said, something to do with hiking. He goes, let's see, why do we hike? I immediately said, we hike for mental health. We feel so much better after hiking. And originally, he didn't like the name. He goes, that's really a long name. I said, yeah, but it says exactly what we do. And so that's when it was conceived. It was born about 6 weeks later. And we raise, we're all volunteer. Nobody gets a salary. All the donations, 100% of donations go to the cause. We even pay the processing fee out of our own pockets for credit cards. And like I said, nobody gets a salary or anything like that. And 80% we give goes to the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation in New York. They give $50,000 grants to scientists that are on the cutting edge of a breakthrough but have not been funded yet. Once they get funded, it's a lot easier for them to get funded again. We give 10% to the Appalachian Trail and 10% to the Pacific Crest Trail. And we're on our 12th year. Last year, we gave a check for $15,000. And our checks for the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation are always over $50,000. Sometimes it can be as high as $80,000.
Wow. So what type of events and what kind of things do you guys organize, and how does it all?
We have hikes going on all over the country. Anybody can volunteer to lead a hike for us. If they Google hike for mental health, we come right up. One of our premier events is we do a hike up Mount Washington in New Hampshire every year. We already have about over 100 people signed up for that one already this year. That one we usually raise over $25,000. That's a lot of fun. And this year we're incorporating the COG, so people can sign up to take the COG up if they don't feel like hiking up the mountain. So it's just a really good, fun event, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm here in Colorado, so, you know, I take a hike here and there around the state, and I feel like 200% better every time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just getting some air, getting taking some, seeing some wildlife and whatever. You know, by the time I'm done, I'm just feeling great.
Yeah, I did the 1,100 mile Florida Trail in 2015, and that took 10 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. That's impressive. Half that trail is underwater, so you're. If feet start to get dry, you know you're heading back into water, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like there might be an element of danger there, too, in Florida and shallow waters.
I stopped counting alligators at 100, and that was only 2 weeks into the trail.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, snakes and goddamn the mosquitoes are unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, you got some mosquitoes in Texas though too. So
yeah, we do.
that's a great thing. And do you know of anything going on here in Colorado?
Not at the moment. But if you go on our website, you can see all our hikes, where they are, you know, and things like that. You can sign up and do it. All our events are non-stigma events, so we tell people if you want to talk, if you have a mental illness. One in four people suffer from some form of mental illness. If you want to talk about it, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. We look at it like you have a cold. We don't look at it like there's no stigma involved, you know.
Right.
And, you know, when I was a kid, there was a stigma about breast cancer. Women didn't talk about it. They died a painful death. They were embarrassed about it. Now we're save the tatas, you know.
Yeah.
If we can do the same thing for mental illness, more people will seek help and we'll have less people taking their lives, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that's a great cause. So thanks for that.
All right.
Amazing work. So, all right. So at the end, I like to wrap up with recommendations. I know deadheads are smart, interesting people who like cool stuff. So, is there a book or an album or a movie or something that's really struck you lately?
Well, this is an old book. It's, I'm sure, out of print, but you can still find it. It's the Rolling Stone interview of Jerry. And it was done probably very early 70s. And it's a great book. It's a paperback, and Jerry's really open and candid. It's just a really, really good interview. Mm-hmm. I should have grabbed it just to show you what the cover looks like. But this is also very cool, because I can't tell you how many times the words I heard were not the words being sung. and this corrects all that. You can get all the words. And there's linear notes about when the song was written and, you know, all kinds of good information on that.
Awesome. Too. That's the annotated Grateful Dead lyric book. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. The complete annotated Grateful Dead lyrics. Yeah. No. It's a really, really good book. You know, after Jerry passed, I went, I saw the Dead, I saw the other ones, What was the other incantation they had?
Further.
And it was good music. I mean, there's no doubt they were all talented. But I couldn't get over the listening to them, and they'd be playing a Jerry song, and it'd be like, yeah, but Jerry would be going like, you know, and I just couldn't get over it. So I stopped seeing them, you know.
Yeah. I haven't seen a whole lot of stuff either. I mean, I saw the first Further tour, and, you know, so one of the offshoots that I was really impressed with was the Mickey Hart Band. That was touring a few years ago with David Schools from Widespread Panic on bass. That was a group that I was really impressed with because they were doing something different. I felt like they were making new music essentially. You know, but if you look at what Bobby's doing with Dead and Company, that's cool, and I'm glad that he's keeping it alive. I don't want to say anything bad about that because it needs to be kept alive. But he had that album called Blue Mountain. Of like folk songs and Americana and stuff that I thought was fantastic. And that was a really good lane for him to maybe stick with. Are you familiar with that album, Blue Mountain? That
I am
did?
Not. I will no. be now.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it's just like, it's all new music and it's very folky and Americana. And like, it felt a lot like what Johnny Cash was sort of doing sort of at the end of his life with, Rick Rubin or whoever was, I think that's who was producing it.
Yeah.
Sort of gothic sounding Americana. I don't know, but, I thought it was a good lane for him. His voice really suited the music.
Wow.
And, but you know, he makes a lot of money with Dead and Company. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. There's no doubt. They're making amazing money.
From the makers of The Big Bong Theory and How I Met Your Dealer comes the hilarious new sitcom, Two Hippies and a Cop, lighting up your Thursday nights this fall on TFTL-TV. Lenny and Wu are two free-spirited hippies living the high life with their love of concerts and herbal remedies.
Hey, Lenny, wasn't that show so good last night?
Totally epic, man. I'm pretty sure I left my body somewhere in the middle of that second set.
Oh, so that's where you went. I thought you went to the restroom.
But here's the twist. Their new roommate is none other than Cletus Strait, an Indiana State cop.
All right, listen up, you two. No more jam sessions past midnight, and keep the incense away from the smoke detector.
Cue the chaos, the mix-ups, and the side-splitting shenanigans as these three unlikely roommates navigate their way through life, love, and the pursuit of peace and understanding. Two hippies and a cop. Because sometimes, the best friendships are the ones you least expect. Don't miss it. Thursdays at 8 p.m. only on TFTL-TV.
I met Phil one time, and I said to him, what do I say to Phil Lesh except thank you, thank you, thank you? I said, you know, you really made us feel like we were part of the band. He got up, came around the table, and hugged me, and he said, you guys were part of the band. We played off you just like you played off us. He goes, you guys were absolutely part of the band. And that was kind of cool, you know, because I've had dreams where I'm up on the stage, you know, off the side while they're performing and stuff. You know?
Yeah.
I
felt that, too. I mean, even the limited time I was able to see him, there was a give and take of energy. And you could tell, I mean, from, you know, a lower energy show to a high energy show and the difference in the crowd.
You
can see it. No doubt.
Yeah, it is amazing. And the Jerry shows, I saw Jerry in Chula Vista, California, just before he went into that coma. It was like the day or two before he went into the coma. And I was there with a bunch of my friends. I said, all right, we got to go. And they're like, he's not going to come on for about 45 minutes after the show. I said, no, Jerry comes on immediately. If it's an 8 o'clock show, at 8 o'clock, he's walking out on the stage. They didn't believe me. Oh, yeah. Jerry was never late. Always right on time. Show starts at 8. He walks out on the stage at 8 o'clock.
And, I did not know that.
Yeah, and he did one of my favorite songs, Shining Star. And I remember being in the crowd, and as soon as he hit the first note, I yelled out, Shining Star. And the guy about 12 rows down looks up at me and goes, oh, my God, that's a good call, you know. And, but what happened was Jerry, and I can't find a tape of it, but Jerry got stuck in the song. And it went on and on and on. It was like, to the point, this is my favorite Jerry song. I was like, Jerry, come on. You know, end it. And so I think he was like maybe getting a little spacey from, because he went right into a coma. I think it was the next day or the day after, you know. Mm-hmm. But I remember going, what the hell's wrong with him? Why can't he end the song, you know? It was weird, you know.
Yeah.
But he influenced my life as much as my father did, to be honest with you. And I wouldn't be the same person I am now if it were not from, obviously, my father, but also the Grateful Dead, you know.
What was sort of your favorite era? Did you prefer the Keith and Donna era versus the Brent era versus the Vince era?
Brent, by far. You know, Keith, by the time I really started seeing the Dead, Keith was not very vibrant. And, you know, Donna, we loved Donna in the band. We loved seeing her. We're like, is she going to be dressed up or is she going to be wearing jeans or what? You know,
right.
A voice, in all honesty, most times was fine. But every now and then, her voice just sucked, you know. Brent came in and did absolutely wonderful, wonderful job. The unfortunate thing was he was there for like 10 years, and everybody was calling him the new guy, you know.
Yeah,
and
still.
Bobby mentioned that. He goes, yeah, he's been with us for 10 years, and they all still call him the new guy, you know. He was really, really very talented, you know.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see him live. I came on a year later, but definitely he was my favorite. As far, I mean, just I just love his voice. I mean, the tone that he added to the harmonies and just his voice was so good and a good
and the passion. There. You know, he sung with passion. You know, he played with passion, sang with passion. He was passionate. There's no doubt about it.
One of my favorite things is watching that Downhill From Here video where with just him and Jerry grinning so hard at each other, you know, just pushing each other I love that.
That is so cool. I hope everybody picks up on that. It's not like just you and I. Because that was so cool. You could just see them playing with each other, you know? That's absolutely fantastic, you know?
Yeah, you could see the love and everything between them right there. It was amazing.
Yeah. It was great. And anytime Bobby could remember the words to Truckin', that was always a positive.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right, Tommy Kennedy, thank you so much for joining me here and telling your stories. And it was sure great to talk to you and to meet you today.
All right. Thank you very much also.
Hey now, do you have a great story about a Grateful Dead show you were at? I'd love to hear it and maybe have you on the podcast. Send me an email at will@talesfromthelot.org and let me know what show you would like to talk about and what made it so special to you.